Take hold. Engage. You are now entering the Cerebro Podcast. Welcome to episode 5. Thank you for joining me today. Thought of the day comes from Helen Keller. Character cannot be developed in ease and quiet. Only through experience of trial and suffering can the soul be strengthened, ambition inspired, and success achieved. Joke of the day. Why has Sesame Street been so popular? Answer, because they created characters with Muppet fleece that felt so good to the puppeteers and felt so good to the audience. Sesame Street is a cultural children's classic creation that started in 1968. The basic mission is still to help kids everywhere grow smarter, stronger, and kinder. Sesame Street was a pivotal program for me. I was able to make a memorable, momentary impact on people because of my crutches. I appeared as an extra in 1978. I have video evidence on YouTube in a clip from episode 1189. It shows me walking with my crutches when I was 5 years old. Other episodes included me working with Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch. And here is the basic Open Sesame scenario of how I got the chance to appear on the show. Producers from Children's Television Workshop in New York City were looking for kids with disabilities to appear on Sesame Street. They contacted United Cerebral Palsy and asked for participants to try out for the show. I got chosen to appear. Children's Television Workshop was very inclusive in trying to fulfill their mission of helping kids grow. They had kids with Down syndrome and other disabilities. Jerry Jewell was an adult actress from the TV show Facts of Life. She appeared on Sesame Street in the 1980s, and she also had cerebral palsy. But what I didn't know until I read the book Street Gang, The Complete History of Sesame Street, was that Carol Spinney, the puppeteer inside the Big Bird costume, also had a brother with cerebral palsy. The book was published in 2008, and it was chock full of secrets about the passion and playfulness of the show. The I Am Big Bird documentary about Carol Spinney from 2015 also featured Big Bird's biggest fan, Nick Birch. Nick also had cerebral palsy. Another Jerry Jewell, but not the one from Facts of Life, wrote the Muppet movie. He had a system of focusing on the dramatic basics that drove character behavior. Bill Prady, the co-creator of The Big Bang Theory, talked about the Muppet method on the Malton on Movies podcast on January 4th, 2019. Bill worked for the Muppets for years. He also wrote the Muppet Vision 3D Disney attraction. During the podcast, he went on to explain to Leonard Maltin and Jesse Maltin that the Muppet Method boiled down to two basic questions. Number one, what does the character want? Number two, what stands in the character's way? One of the reasons why I think Sesame Street works so well is because it helps teach kids through example and illustration. The characters negotiate through their combined and separate worlds. Bert and Ernie have a way of negotiating with each other, and Animal has his own wilder ways of negotiating. Kermit and Miss Piggy have their own methods of trying to navigate or press those romantic or sympathy buttons. Big Bird has his own innocent style, while Oscar has his own down and dirty methods in his trash can. Many of the Muppet characters have a single-minded or monomaniacal motivation to see what they want and to figure out a way to get it. Bill Prady also went on to explain the two questions were expanded to four Fraggle Rock questions that he learned from Jerry Jewell. Fraggle Rock was a Muppet show about a secret Muppet society that learned to live together in an underground world. In the mid-1980s, the Muppet Method questions became: number one, who is the story about? Number two, what do they want? Number three, what stands in their way? Number four, what did they learn? One of the reasons why I appreciate appearing on Sesame Street was it gave me social-emotional learning opportunities that turned into a powerful purpose where I was able to show others the power of my crutches. In school, I had to develop mental and physical ways to deal with obstacles and relationships. In fact, I often heard from kids and adults that I had a developmental disability. That's what cerebral palsy was characterized as in the 1970s and 80s. I thought, that's what I need to do, is develop more mentally. So to put it into Muppet context, the story was about me as a kid with a disability. I did not have an instruction manual on how to succeed with a disability. The second question, what did I want? Going to grammar school and high school in a mainstream way, I wanted to compete and succeed in school like the other kids. I wanted to fit in. Many times, I also stood out because of my disability, not by choice, but just by living, walking, and talking. In fact, I got asked both by kids and adults the common question, can't you walk and talk at the same time? The question sounded easy, but I really couldn't answer because I was still figuring out how my body worked and moved. I knew that I processed things differently. I also discovered that my brain was receiving so much information from different parts of my body. My brain processed information 2 or 3 times faster than everyone else's brain. As I mentioned in episode 1 with the 1966 Batman TV series, I developed a love of language through joking and jabbing juxtapositions and other campy compositions that the show utilized, like a thoughtful Batman utility belt. I also talked using different oxymorons and wonder words during the repetitious and reconstructive rehab. My mind was more fluidly flexible than my body was. Now to the third Muppet Method question. What stood in my way? The anxiety of attention added to the already active ancillary academic assets in my head. I may have moved slowly, but I wasn't stupid. The hundreds and sometimes thousands of processes, quite frankly, wasn't as automatic as everyone else's. My disability just made the delivery more deliberate. The fourth Muppet Method question was, what did I learn? I had to learn to navigate through cumulative curiosities of myself and others. I sometimes did not have language or comprehension to understand or communicate what was happening to me or how to convey it sometimes. In times where I needed extreme focus, I could hear things, but I could not respond because other parts of my body were engaged in other activities. Learning things physically helped me to build some important muscle memory to go with my academic memory muscle. As I got older, the muscle memory combined with the high-speed processing eventually turned memories into a collage of a learning experience. For example, during a rain or snowstorm, I could remember moments of the storms through hundreds of similar situations. Different muscle movements often triggered a collage of memories that I could pan through like a camera in my head in a matter of seconds. Another thing that I learned in the 1970s and 80s was, given the amount of physical, mental, emotional, and societal barriers, I needed to learn things through much smaller lessons. Because of the barriers, the attrition levels were so high. In fact, after a few years in school, learning for me sometimes became about teaching others or leading by example and hoping that the example would produce future results. In other words, I hoped that by observing my disability experience, kids and adults would grow smarter, stronger, and kinder in my world too. As I got older, the mistakes would sometimes lead to mistreatment in the form of insults or bullying and other negative instances. I held on to the hope that my example would make the future better for those that would come after me. To help illustrate this, I used the paradigms of Martin Luther King and Jackie Robinson. And I almost forgot, of course, Helen Keller. That way, my disability and my crutches could be used as an instrument for the greater good. By attributing the loss to greater good, I could give my negative experience new meaning. The falls or failures I had could mean success in a minor way. Minor successes could therefore lead to cumulative, more major successes. As a result, learning and teaching from others, even as a negotiation strategy, could help both sides understand each other better. The good news is, now there are simpler social-emotional learning tools. Mitchell Resnick is the director of the Lifelong Kindergarten Lab at MIT, or Massachusetts Institute of Technology Media Lab. He has developed tools to engage people. Here's a clip from YouTube.
You know, we tend to think about the kindergarten approach in terms of four guiding principles that we call the four P's of creative learning: projects, passion, peers, and play. That is, we develop technologies and activities to engage kids in working on projects based on their passions, in collaboration with peers, in a playful spirit.
Now think about a time where you needed or wanted to develop your character. What character do you want to be? What did you want? What stood in your way? What did you learn?
I hope you enjoyed the fifth episode.
Thank you for allowing me to be a voice inside your head. I would love to hear your thoughts. Please share it with someone you know. You can listen to the show on Podbean, iTunes, and Google Play. The Cerebral Podcast is also now on Spotify.
Shout out to all the listeners on the Cerebral Podcast Facebook group.
You can email the show at thecerebralpodcast@gmail.com to send questions, comments, or ideas for the show. You can also follow the show on Twitter at the hashtag thecerebralpodcast. And remember, it takes effort to be vulnerable, be accountable, and be respectful in the way you treat others and yourself. You can be the biggest variable in your life when you take ownership.
Now, take hold, engage in your world. You are now leaving the Cerebral Podcast.